Even if your child has mild to moderate autism, learning disabilities, attention difficulties, or other learning challenges, he can receive a classical Christian education. The Simply Classical curriculum was created by Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope, an author, educator with a master's degree in special education, and homeschooling mother of twins with special needs. The Simply Classical curriculum has become an answer to prayer for parents and schools. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 with the coupon code LPR.
Most of the time, there's not an effort to engage in your argument in any good faith. People will just paint you as a homophobe. So it really has just kind of narrowed and shriveled the bounds of discourse.
My grandmother used to say, don't be so open-minded that your brains fall out. There are some scholars who would really like something to be true, who unfortunately become too open-minded, too uncritical.
If I'm looking inside myself for strength, it will fail. But that's not actually where my strength comes from, that Christ is greater than my heart.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love Issues Etc.
If you're like me, you're not so much surprised that it happened, but you're surprised how easily it happened. The Republican Party that was, in my opinion, kind of getting a little shaky on the issues that matter most to me. I speak only for myself here. The issues of life, of family, of marriage, those things that are really the foundation stones of a free society and of any kind of civilization. It was getting so shaky, it didn't take much to kind of knock it over. It was, well, to put it in kind of poetic terms, a bit of a house of cards. All it took was Donald Trump to come along, and suddenly the party is in question, and even its leadership seems to not know what to do. Do we go ahead with this fellow, or do we stay behind and risk obscurity? Well, obscurity is not an option, so it looks like they're going ahead with this fellow, which leaves voters like me in a bit of a pickle. What do you do? I haven't really considered myself a Republican in a long time, but I'm looking for that. I'm dreaming of that party, a national party that could really do something nationally that's actually pro-life and pro-family and pro-marriage. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Monday afternoon, the 20th of June. We're going to talk about a pro-life third party. Bill Dominich will join us from The Federalist a little bit later. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be our guest. We'll continue our series with him. Top three verses, the imminence of Christ's return. It could happen anytime. It could also happen 1,000 years from now. What are the top three verses on the Bible when it comes to Christ returning as he has promised? Our call-in number for the next hour, you can join us with questions or comments, 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, tweet at issuesetc. Our beloved on-demand listeners, whenever, wherever you listen, just use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Ben Dominich joins us to talk about a pro-life third party. He's publisher of The Federalist and author of a recent column titled The Party of Life, The Case for a Pro-Life Third Party. Ben, welcome to Issues Etc.
Good to be with you.
You say that the case for kind of a remade new Republican Party is not convincing. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that it speaks to the fact that you alluded to in your intro there, Todd, which is just that the Republican Party as it stands has been really crumbling for quite a while. It did take Donald Trump to knock it over, but it's kind of ironic that at a point at which the Republican elected officials across the country have been historically successful in the sense that they have the largest majority that they had since Herbert Hoover. They have reduced the number of Democratic governors down to 18, and they've taken over an overwhelming number of state houses and legislatures. It's also come at a time at which what the Republican Party stands for has actually become a lot less clear, in part because since the passing of the Ronald Reagan era, since the passing of the 1990s, when you had a bipartisan coalition in favor of religious liberty and generally in favor of what you might describe as traditional family values, you've seen a great sort happen, at which point the Republican Party has started to become a lot more liberal on social issues, particularly its leadership, or they've reached a point where they're only really willing to give lip service to the ideas of the cause of stopping abortion, of reconfirming the importance of the family in our culture, issues of that nature. And because of that, we've reached a point at which I think it's really time to consider which third-party efforts historically have been most effective. And the argument that I advanced in my piece is essentially that while you can have these various ideological vehicles as parties, and you can have parties as vehicles like the Bull Moose Party or the Reform Party that stand temporarily for a candidate movement or a collection of ideas, actually the parties that are the most successful historically are those that advocate for a single issue above all and set everything else aside, including the force that we've seen in the past for abolition, for prohibition, for women's voting rights. And I would argue that this is the sort of approach that the pro-lifers who have engaged so long in such a struggle across the nation should consider as a way to thrust their issue back into the center of the American political life in a way that it has been rejected with the nomination of Donald Trump.
I want to come back to Trump in a moment, but all other things being equal, do you expect the issue of life? And I agree, it is an issue of that simply is of a greater caliber than all the others that are of concern. Do you expect it to be discussed at all by the two nominees?
Well, let's be clear about one thing. Donald Trump went on Howard Stern many years ago and talked openly about the fact that when his mistress at the time told him that she was pregnant with their child, that he encouraged her to have an abortion. And her disagreement with that was the reason, ultimately, that he was forced to marry her. And this is the sort of thing that comes from someone who may espouse views right now that say, I will nominate pro-life justices, I will put pro-life people in a position of power. But you and I both know that there is a wide range of ideological issues other than merely the appointment of Supreme Court justices that presidents have an impact on when it comes to the issue of life. Not just how taxpayer money is expended, but of course the funding of Planned Parenthood, where Donald Trump has also sounded, you know, on the other side of things. I don't think the issue of life is going to be a core issue that is discussed, except to the point that Hillary Clinton may bring it up in the course of this campaign simply as a way to drive down Donald Trump's numbers among social conservatives, among those who value the issue of life, simply because whenever he talks about it, he's all over the map.
You talk about third parties, you know, that are efforts for third parties that have fallen into various categories. But what you mentioned before was a third party that at least at the outset focuses on one single issue. Explain why that is so important.
Well, I think the reason that that's so important is that with the great sort that's happened that has left pro-lifers in a monopartisan position, where it's only Republicans who are even bothering to give lip service to them, that's a very bad thing for the cause of life. That a point at which you had a bipartisan consensus or people spread across multiple parties who cared about the life issue, that forced people into making much harder choices when it came to the judges that they supported, the policies that they supported. In order to get back to that point, I think that we have to start at putting people out there who, while they may disagree about economic issues, they may disagree about foreign policy, they may disagree about a lot of different other issues outside of the issue of life, that on that issue, they are united. And frankly, the approach that ought to be used in that circumstance is a pretty simple one. In situations and states where someone who is running on a Republican ticket, let's say, has a record on the life issue that simply cannot be trusted, then someone ought to run against them on the vehicle of the party of life. If someone is running in either party who has a strong record on life issues, on the abortion issue, on putting that as something that is not just something they say that they care about, but it is priority for them, then that person can be endorsed in that instance. There's no need to run national campaigns, elections against every different official or something like that. And I think that the pro-life movement is still strong enough, does still have so many people who agree with it, that it could transform into something like this and force the issue onto all of the different politicians who are perfectly happy to bring it up during an election year. But once that election is over, say that they don't have the time, they don't have the effort, they're not willing to do what it takes to do things like defund Planned Parenthood, even after it is clear that they have engaged in illegal practices.
You are talking about what many pro-life voters have done by default, and that is to make this their issue and to vote accordingly at every opportunity that they can. What's the advantage of turning this into a party? Is it because as you just mentioned, it can actually put into place lawmakers, legislators, judges, things like that, who carry this issue forward between elections. Is that what you're saying?
I think that's part of it. And you can certainly look back historically and find a number of instances where parties like these in the past were successful at electing governors, senators, and, you know, and members of state legislatures who had an impact on policy. That's part of it. But as you know, when politicians feel force from a direction, they feel the need to respond as well. And so what this will do, frankly, in the context of the current debate, is force the Republican Party to make a decision about where they're going to stand on this issue, in the sense that they have given lip service for such a long time to the cause of life, but then engage in nominating figures who are completely opposed to actually taking the steps needed in order to fight on this issue. I do not think it is an accident that one of the three incumbents, only three, have lost this cycle, was Renee Elmers in North Carolina, who did exactly that, ran as a pro-lifer time and again, and then ended up going against her own bill when it actually came time to make a decision and take a stand. This is the point of having a third-party effort. It forces the politicians into a position where they know that if they do not live up to their promises, they will receive a challenge that could ultimately end their career.
Do you foresee it drawing off pro-life Democrats?
I think that the pro-life Democrat is something that I'm curious to gauge whether they still exist. I personally think that they do, particularly, I think, on the local level. You see a lot of Democrats who, when they step away from issues of foreign policy or national import, sound a lot more like pro-life Democrats in the past. Certainly, there are a number of Catholic Democrats, Hispanic Democrats, or people who consider themselves independents who end up voting for Democrats, who break with Democrats in their lockstep support of Planned Parenthood and their support for abortion on demand at all stages. I'm curious to see how many people out across the country really would support things like a 20-week ban. We saw in Texas where Democrats thought that they were going to ride the Wendy Davis Express to victory, that Hispanic women, a traditional Democratic voting bloc, went against them in mass because they disagree with Wendy Davis on the issue. And that's something that I'd like to see tested further at a local level and at a congressional level, because I think that that will ultimately change the way that both parties see this issue.
What do you think about the appeal of this, of a pro-life party that in essence kind of suspends its judgment on other important issues, but sticks to the issue of protecting innocent unborn life? What about its appeal to young people?
You know, that's a very interesting question as well. We've seen rising numbers of support for the pro-life cause among younger people for quite some time. This is due to a lot of different factors, but I think a lot of it has to do with simply a recognition on their part that a lot of the fictions that were perpetrated on the baby boomers regarding the viability of human life in the early stages are things that they've come to reject and understand differently. It's one of the reasons why you see, even on the other social conservative issues, younger people expressing more pro-life views. I think there's an opportunity to win a lot of them over with a party of life, as long as you understand that, you know, this is going to be something that will have to allow for a lot of different disagreements across a host of other issues. There are going to be people who could run for a nomination for the party of life who have the same economic values as Pope Francis, which are, from my perspective, completely at odds with my own. Okay, and yet on the issue of life, we can agree. And yet there are people who could also run on this ticket who have the views of someone like Ron Paul on the economy. But still, he had 100% pro-life rating when he was in Congress. So it's one of the situations here where I think if you're willing to allow for more disagreement in other areas, then you can actually have an impact by prioritizing one issue that you say is of much deeper moral import for the future of the nation than any other.
What is the biggest obstacle, Ben, to actually making this a reality, a pro-life party?
I think the biggest obstacle is actually the existing pro-life movement, which has over the course of the several years become kind of fractured and had disagreements about what they ought to prioritize, whether it should be regulating a group of abortion clinics at the local level, whether it should be fighting on fetal pain bills, whether it should be fighting for 20-week bans, whether it should be doing ultrasound approaches, things of that nature. I think what this would actually allow you to do, if you had that movement kind of have a coming together, is to say, hey, let's put all of these things that we want in an agenda together in one party. Let's stop squabbling about which thing we should prioritize over the other when it comes to fighting within the Republican or Democratic parties, which are at low ebbs in terms of their popularity in America right now. and understand that we have an opportunity now with these two-party structures so weak, with them so out of touch with the kind of things that people generally want in our country, that we could take advantage of that by pushing the issue forward in a more unified way. That's going to take something on the part of activists and of organizers, of the donor community. And I think that there is at least some opportunity for that now, given the fact that there are so many people who are disgusted with both party candidates at this stage and unwilling to give on the presidential level, who maybe are willing to consider the idea of rolling the dice on something that is a bigger priority issue for a lot of Americans than any other.
Ben Domenech is the publisher of The Federalist. He's author of a recent column titled The Party of Life, The Case for a Pro-Life Third Party. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org, and click Listen on Demand. You can also follow Ben on Twitter at BDOMENECH. Ben, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you so much, and thank you for spelling my last name.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. We do a series with him every week called Top Three Verses. They're not the only verses, but they're the top three verses. He recently spoke at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference on the return of Christ, a biblical view of the return of Christ over against a lot of very crazy ideas. But he didn't have time to deal with the imminence of Christ's return. After all, we only gave him 45 minutes. We're going to give him another 45 here on the program so he can make the case for the imminence of Christ's return based on these three verses from Matthew, Mark, and Revelation. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will join us, co-host of a weekly radio talk show called Table Talk Radio. Top three verses for the imminence of Christ's return.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you dread going to work out?
Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.